But when you then talk with administrators, 95% of principals are going to tell you that they have a social emotional strategy in place at their school.
It's a topic that a lot of teachers are dealing with, but not enough are talking about. We're going to talk social emotional learning next.
And now it's time for another edulicious episode of the Bentley Brothers Podcast, bringing you what's current and what works in education. Here are your hosts, Scott and Tim Bentley.
Bentley Brothers, Bentley, Bentley Brothers, bringing education information like no other. Bentley Brothers, yep. Bentley, Bentley Brothers, bringing education information like no other. Yep.
First name Bentley, last name Brothers, bringing education information like
Scott, no other. Scott, I'm excited to talk about this topic, something that's near and dear to both of our hearts. Before we get going with our guest today, why don't you let our listeners know about our sponsor that we love so much?
Hey, Tim, we want to thank Advancement Courses for sponsoring today's show. Stay tuned, everybody, at the end of the show to learn how to save 20% on really amazing online professional development.
Right. So stay tuned after we get things rolling a little bit. At one point in time, at a mystery point, we will share that code with everybody. And so today we have on the show with us the general manager from Advancement Courses. Woohoo!
Woo.
Yeah. So her name is Krisha. Here we go. Are you ready? Drum roll, please. Lazarevich. Did I say that right, Krisha?
You sure did. First try and everything.
Okay. She previously was a middle school math and science teacher in three different states. Wow. And she also, besides being the general manager at Advancement Courses, is a mom. And she's a mom of a three-year-old little boy, but she's soon to be, within the next couple of weeks, the mom of two little boys. Is that right, Krisha?
That sure is right.
Awesome. So congratulations to you. And it's going to be some busy times ahead, isn't it?
I think so. Any sanity I have, I think, may leave. But it's okay. I hear you get it back eventually.
Yeah. Well, and you get the joy of having that cute little guy around.
That's right.
Yeah, for sure. So why don't you get us started and give us a little bit of your background. How did you end up getting, we're going to talk about social and emotional learning, but why don't you give us a little bit of your background so our listeners get to know you a little bit. How did you get into Advancement Courses? How did you get into this online learning platform?
Yeah, well, I actually knew that I wanted to be a teacher when I was in the second grade. My parents were both immigrants. English was not their first language. And so one of the things that was instilled in me very early is this idea that education can help you become whoever you want to be. And I think most of the people listening probably can really connect with that idea. And so when I started teaching, I just wanted to learn a lot about schools. And so that's why I worked in so many different kinds of schools, from private boarding for all women to public urban schools. I worked in a very rural one room schoolhouse. And one of the things that really inspired me is that no matter where you go, there are phenomenal K-12 educators. And then what I also learned is that when teachers are getting prepared for entering the classroom, there are so many gaps that first and second and third year needs to fill in. And so I ended up then working with faculty in higher education to think about how can we really build great programs that help students to learn. And that's how I ended up finding my way into the online learning space. And that's how I ultimately ended up finding my way to Advancement Courses, is because what we do really marries those two pieces together. It takes that very practical need that teachers and educators have for how to develop and grow your skills throughout your career, and it ties it with those best practices that higher education can bring in terms of continuous development and preparation for new educators and thinking about how it is that you can keep current with a lot of the trends. So I feel very fortunate to have found my way to Advancement Courses and to find a place where all of those pieces come together into one great mixing pot that helps our students learn.
Yeah, Christian, when I started looking around at the courses and started thinking my school alone has 10 new teachers or first or second year teachers, and looking at the titles and the description of the courses and thinking like, oh my gosh, this could help all these young teachers and older teachers as well. But my gosh, the kinds of the coursework that's being offered is fantastic, and the ease of which advancement courses. The website works. I was totally blown away by just being able to like sort it by your state, find those things out so fast. I just thought it was brilliant the way it's designed. So when you're picking out courses, before we get into social emotional learning, are you targeting younger teachers, or are you trying to just hit like current trends in education? How do you go about actually picking out those courses for the online service?
Yeah, so that's actually one of the harder parts of what we do, because really we're trying to make sure that there is something for everybody. And I think you hit on some of the most important parts, which is that professional development for teachers can be very confusing, depending on what state you live in, what certification you hold. And we need to make sure that the types of courses, the titles, and the content can be applicable to everyone in the school, from school counselors to administrators, new teachers. We have teachers who've been teaching for 25 plus years. We have gym teachers. We have art teachers. And what we've also seen is that there are lots of PD providers that offer your standard topics, right? Literacy, math skills development, things like that. So we try to go outside of that to make sure that no matter who you are and what you've already taken, we have something you've never seen before and are interested in.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. Hey, Krisha, let's go ahead and start talking about social emotional learning, if you don't mind. And then we can kind of come back to that topic of your website, the advancement courses and so on. But, you know, kids come to school these days, particularly, it's getting worse and worse, I think, with a lot of baggage. Mm-hmm. A lot of things that they've been dealing with at home, in their families, in their social life. They're living online and being exposed to so many different things these days, and they're bringing that into the classroom, and it's mm-hmm. a really big deal. So what ideas, what thoughts do you have on that you found is working with kids these days?
Well, I think there's a lot of different ways to answer that. I think the most important place to start is that we have a lot of our educators who sort of describe social emotional learning as the gas that helps to fuel students from point A to point B. And point A to point B end up being those content standards, which most of us know that we need to meet in order for our students to be showing adequate progress on a yearly basis. And I think what we're finding and what we're hearing is that those students just don't have enough gas to get from those to travel that distance. And so I think the other piece to keep in mind is that this is so complex. These types of skills, things like resiliency and self-awareness, self-management, these are the skills that most people equate with being successful in life. And so when we start talking about this topic area is when everybody's emotions start getting really involved, as they should. That's true for administrators. That's true for educators. It's also true for parents. And so I really think that the first place to start is recognizing that we're all in this together, that this is an idea that we know has been successful. But when you talk with educators, only 20% of them will say, yes, we have a social emotional strategy in place in my school building. But when you then talk with administrators, 95% of principals are going to tell you that they have a social emotional strategy in place at their school. And I think that statistic right there just highlights what the problem is that uh-huh. we talk about things so differently. It's hard to get on the same page with what we're actually doing, and how then do we measure progress against it?
Yeah, that implementation of any kind of a strategy with social emotional learning, or with just helping kids make their way through what's really difficult. And, it's really hard to identify, I think, for teachers. And I think that statistic or what we were talking about is really interesting. I do think there's a disconnect. And that's why I'm really glad we're addressing that topic with you today. So if you were to say, like, if you were to walk in and say, here's a strategy that every school should at least have in place, if they're addressing this kind of some foundational pieces, it doesn't mean that they're going above and beyond, but like at least you got to have this in place at your school site. What are some of those kind of foundational strategies?
One of the things that we're learning from our educators is that The first place to start is with a common definition in your school of what social emotional learning means for you. There are many different definitions that can be employed. Many of them start to include umbrella topics like resiliency and grit and growth mindset. And so being really intentional about how you're defining social emotional learning and what you're going to use as a measure to determine if you're being successful or not is the right place to start. And then I think what also we're learning is that there needs to be consistency across all grade levels for how you're going to start implementing this over time. One of the other pieces that a recent research study showed us is that when you start implementing social emotional strategies at a school building, you're going to get resistance for the first 2 years. And it's not usually resistance around the concept. Most educators are very bought in. Most parents are very bought into the idea that their students need to grow as people. But what you start finding is that once you hit around that 5-year mark is when that buy-in really starts to coalesce. And that seems to tie in with that message of what we're actually doing becoming very clear.
So setting a definition of what social emotional learning is super important for a site to develop that together, kind of like they do a mission statement or something, right?
Yeah.
What have you heard from different schools is a good definition for that, or is a worthy definition? I mean, is there such a thing as a bad definition of social emotional learning?
No, I don't think you can be wrong. This is one of those great areas where you can't make a mistake. Most schools are looking to implement social emotional learning, frankly, from the perspective of reducing discipline issues. And the idea is that if you help your students engage with one another more appropriately, and if you help your educators engage those students in deeper critical thinking around self-management, that a lot of those discipline problems will end up going away. And I think that would be lovely if that's the way it actually worked. I think what we find instead is that discipline issues can actually reduce once you start engaging students in other more productive behaviors. So I would encourage a definition to include pieces around how do you integrate social emotional skills into your curriculum. So don't just create, you know, a 45-minute block of time once a week and expect your students to make progress. Instead, teach the skills you want them to learn, and then have a plan across your grade level or across your department for how you're then going to fold that into the activities that you already do. This is not one more thing, right? It shouldn't just be an added piece on top of what you're already doing. It's a different way of framing how you teach empathy and critical thinking across your curriculum.
Yeah, and I think you know, I've seen some different kinds of strategies to approach this topic, everything from like mindfulness and almost like meditation and working through that piece to, you know, let's be really intentional about how we're teaching kids to deal with emotions. I think one of the things that Tim and I believe in a lot is unstructured play that's disappeared from kids' lives has taken those opportunities for them to put these things into practice. And when it's only like an adult kind of leading them on how to deal with these things, and they don't ever learn themselves how to self-regulate, how to deal with the stress of conflict, how to negotiate with their peers, like a lot of the social emotional things, the things that I worry that about my students are things that are out of my control as a teacher. So is there just a piece of this where the teacher has to let go certain aspects, or should we be the superheroes that we're told we are?
Well, every teacher is a superhero, so that is still true. Here's an example of something that I think might speak to what you're asking about. We learned from one of our educators in one of her projects that almost weekly they had some sort of safety drill, whether it was an active shooter drill, a lockdown drill, a tornado drill, a severe weather drill, right? You get the point. These things add up, and she taught second grade. Second graders don't understand what these loud noises are or why we're hiding under our desks or why I have to sit still and be quiet. So what she did is she implemented some of these mindfulness strategies. She taught students to say, okay, take a minute and I want you to really think about how you're feeling. Mm-hmm. And the first thing that she learned was that students could identify three feelings: happy, sad, and scared. Mm-hmm. And so her next strategy then became, how do I help my students identify more emotions than just those three? And I think what you brought up about playfulness is a great example, because there are so many interactions where you can ask a child, how do you think that other person is feeling right now? Or how do you think the character in this book is feeling right now? Mm-hmm. There are lots of different ways you can add that into what you're already doing. This educator then said, okay, so we're going to take some yoga techniques. And we're going to say, when these lockdown drills are blaring, why don't you try stretching different parts of your body, again, in a very contained way? And what she ended up doing throughout the year was creating habits where students could be mindful of the moment. They could understand that these are the things that I do when this particular event is happening. They started to have a better understanding of what these different emotions were. And then she could start having conversations around, so why are we sitting under our desks right now with the lights off? And I think that's a great example of a way that you can take something that's out of your control and turn it into a moment that could become very productive for your students. Because the following year, and this is what's great about following your educators over time, these students went to third grade, where the third grade teacher was able to continue those strategies into test taking. That's the first year that they're taking their standardized tests. So now all of a sudden you've got an incredible foundation that you can start building on to help students be successful in all areas.
Yeah, you know, I think the teachers are doing these things with their kids sometimes without even realizing that they're building in the social emotional. You're pointing out that it does need to be intentional. It needs to be planned. But at the same time, I don't think teachers need to get too down on themselves and think like, oh, it's one more thing. They're probably already doing a lot of this stuff. I mean, today we were just reading Out of My Mind, my favorite kid's book. And Molly and Claire are mocking Melody, the main character. And so we took the opportunity to talk about making fun of people. And, you know, I kind of talked about my own experience with getting made fun of as a child. And the kids were asking me questions. Oh, why did they make fun of you, Mr. Bedley? You know, and we just had this big class discussion, and they had got the kids talking to each other. And, you know, is that okay? Like, do you want to be made fun of? Is it okay to make fun of other people? And really just build that social piece into something like a read aloud, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You're so right, Tim. And I think one of the other pieces too is that I think educators can sometimes feel like it's an overwhelming thing to teach a child how to grow up into a good human being. I realize that's what we do through content every day. But when you start thinking about the hundreds of kids you teach, it can feel very overwhelming. And I think one of the most important pieces to know about social emotional learning is that if you care, if you're coming from a genuine, authentic place of supporting that student, they're going to learn in spite of whatever the outcome is. So you can't be wrong, right? If you come from a place of authenticity, which educators do, you're going to help that child. It might not be today, and they may not realize it until 5 or 10 years from now, but it will matter.
Gosh, and the further I get into this career, and Tim and I joke that it would take a couple lifetimes to master this profession, but the more I just think like, you know, yes, I want my kids to be great at math and reading and those things, but more than anything, I just want them to be good people, because, you know, when I get cut off and on the freeway and someone's like giving me some rude signs, I'm like, oh, I just want these kids to be nice. I just want them to be kind. I just want them to be understanding and forgiving and caring and all of those great things. And I think the more we can build this in, just the better, I think, the more reward we get that we love as teachers. Getting a great standardized test score, I don't feel like it's more a sense of relief than it is a sense of joy. But when I see my kids showing kindness to other kids, that's when it's like, oh my gosh, that's the joy, the happiness, the reward that I want as a teacher. I don't want it to be about the academics things, even though I want that for my kids because I know it can help them in their future. I want it to be about those things.
Yeah. Scott, you bring up another point too, which I think is that there's a side benefit to teaching our kids how to be good people, which is that as a community of educators in our school building, we can be very intentional about how do we do those things for each other as well. And so that's one of the interesting pieces that I think comes out of a real focus on social emotional learning, is that we have to hold ourselves to those same standards, mm-hmm. which means all of a sudden the way we run our professional development in our school has to change. The way we interact with each other as peers or with our administrators or with our support teams also has to change. And isn't it amazing to work in a place where you feel those same tenets surrounding your work, not just the work you're expected to give, but the work that you can also receive in return?
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely. Now, you mentioned one, I got one other question for you. You mentioned measuring your results with this. Mm-hmm. How would you do that? How do you measure, you know, social emotional growth with your kids? Do you have any ideas for the teachers out there to be able to do that?
Yeah, so I would think about the difference between formative assessment and summative assessment, right? Social emotional learning may be worth thinking about in terms of actual progress rather than absolute outcomes. That's one of the areas where we find educators get stuck, is when you try to say, you know, 95% of my students will achieve 90% of our social emotional standards 90% of the time, is when everything breaks loose, right? Instead, what you're trying to do is show that progress through those other pieces that are important. So maybe what you do is you start noting how able are students to focus on one task at a time. Right. So maybe you start looking for each individual student. How is that changing based on the strategies that they're employing? Maybe you base it on how many emotions can my student identify? And it's not, again, about they need to be able to observe these 10 emotions in this particular way. It's just this idea that as you check in with them, there's progress being made. I think at the older school levels, it becomes more about the content that you're teaching. Right. So this student can form a cohesive argument from a perspective that's not their own. And again, how well they do that is something they can continue to grow in. But the fact that they're progressing and being able to empathize, that they're progressing towards being able to understand multiple perspectives and know when they're doing that, I think those are the assessment opportunities that then support academic learning, but again, don't supersede it.
I love it.
I wish I could say these are my ideas. These come from all of our fantastic educators who put them all down.
Now, do you offer courses in social emotional learning on advancement courses?
We do. They're actually our most popular category of courses right now. We actually see educators coming in cohorts, which is really cool. They come either with a particular group of students in mind that they all want to figure out how to wrap around and support. Sometimes we see entire departments who will come and take courses with us. In things like growth mindset, student anxiety is actually our most popular course. It turns out that students feel a lot of pressure these days, and there are lots of things that we need to do to be able to help them move through that. So yes, it's one of our, it's, like I said, it's our most popular category.
What a great idea. It's almost like a book study, but you take a course together with a bunch of your peers, and like then everybody can be on the same page too. That's a really cool thought, Tim.
Yeah, and get credit for it.
Yeah.
So I think I need to take that course, man. I've had this poor little girl in my class that's just so overwhelmed with anxiety these days. She thinks that her family is going to get, her parents are going to get taken away from her because of all this sensational stuff on the news. So she comes to school just like sick. I saw her just getting out of the car this morning. She hadn't even been at school yet. I saw her, you know, because I was out there on duty and saw her just, and she, her face just looked like completely drained. It was so sad. And I've been trying to work with her and just build her up and just like, you know, calm her fears. And here she is missing all this class now. She can't even focus when she's in class because she's worried that her parents are going to get sent back to the country they came from. I mean, this is just, it's awful, you know? So we do have to have the tools as educators to deal with these types of things. That's for sure.
Yeah. The kind of things kids have to deal with is, it's just incredible. And, But how well they can be resilient when they have someone that cares about them and helps them along. So
absolutely.
It has the strategies.
All right, Christian, we're going to change gears right now with you. And we know that you're the general manager of advancement courses, the world's leader in education courses not held in a classroom. So today we're going to see how much you know about the history of online and pre-online education.
Okay.
All right, we're going to call our little game today. You're not old enough to remember this, but you could still have heard it. There was a song back in the 70s I used to listen to. We don't need no education classroom. Well, they didn't have a classroom part in
there. We don't need no.
Okay, thank you, Pink Floyd. Anyway, Scott, why don't you tell our audience who Krisha will be competing for today?
Krisha, you're going to be competing for Sarah Cutcomp, a fourth grade teacher in Southern California. If you're able to answer two out of the three questions correctly, Sarah will be a wait. She's not going to just be awarded a download of the ridiculously popular edgy rock band. Krisha, would you tell Sarah what you're going to offer for her?
Sarah is going to get a free continuing education course.
Oh my goodness. I think that's probably the biggest prize we've ever given away on the show, Tim.
Yes, I think it is. What is that valued at?
It is valued at $199.
Wow.
Oh.
It's not quite that valuable to our listeners because they get 20% off.
That's right.
The general public. Okay. So here we go, Krisha, with your first question. Number one, the groundwork for online courses was laid by correspondence courses. You even know what those are?
I sure do.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if you were old enough. When I was a kid, you know, you could do correspondence courses where you fill stuff in and then you mail it in.
Mail
it back to you and stuff. So the University of Chicago was the first school to offer a correspondence course, a course that was not in the classroom. So what year did this take place in? Was it A?
1892.
Was it B?
1938.
Or was it C?
1953. We really started off with an easy one here, too.
Gosh. Well.
How far back are we going with these correspondence courses? 1892, 1938, or 1953?
Way back.
Way back.
What do you think?
Well, I'm going to go with the second option, option B.
1938. Well, guess what? It was actually even earlier than that.
Was it really?
1892.
Unbelievable.
Oh. So what discipline was that in, do you know?
I don't know.
What?
Sorry.
I'm going to look it up now.
We will deal with discipline on question number two. That was a segue, even though you don't know what the questions are. Okay. So in 1965, moving quite a bit into the future here, the University of Wisconsin offered a telephone distance-based learning program. What career did this program teach?
Is this like a chat line where you all call into the same phone number and then a professor talks to you? Do you remember those, Tim?
Remember party lines?
Party lines.
Okay. So which discipline was this telephone distance-based learning program in? Was it A?
Electricians.
Was it B?
Physicians.
Or was it C?
Morticians.
Some poetry going.
We're rhyming today.
Yeah, so you have electricians, physicians, or morticians.
Well, I was thinking, I know nursing is one of the most popular online programs now, so I would go with physicians.
Oh, you would? Wow.
I would.
That is. Now, can you believe that you can take a class over the telephone on how to be a. I would not want that person to be my doctor. I'm sorry. It's just.
There's really good tools these days that can help.
Yeah, but not the telephone.
Did they have push-button telephones in that year, Tim, or were they the rotary ones? They'll take forever to dial in.
Oh, yeah, we used that. Well, I don't remember much from 1965, but I was alive, I must say. Okay, so number three, the first ever online course. Now we're getting into your cup of tea here. The first ever online course was offered in 1989, believe it or not. That was like 10 years before I even got the internet. Which institution offered these courses? Was it A?
University of Michigan.
Was it B?
University of Phoenix.
Or was it C?
Chapman College.
Well.
You want to be able to think aloud with us here? What are you thinking on this?
Well, University of Michigan does a lot of interesting things.
It's a fine university.
Phoenix was not the answer.
The what now?
I'm pretty sure University of Phoenix is not the answer.
It could be the answer.
I wouldn't. I wouldn't eliminate it.
Yeah, I don't think that's it.
There are three choices, here.
So there's Chapman College too, which I'm not sure I know much about, but maybe they were really smart.
Yeah.
Okay. How about University of Michigan?
I'll give you a hint. It's the largest college in the United States today.
Can I phone a friend?
Yes. Oh, yes. A friend. Who would you like to call? Would you like to call somebody in Arizona, maybe?
Oh dear.
You think it twice about that answer? I don't know. That's a tough one.
What do we think? How about B? Let's go with Phoenix. The one I think is wrong. Maybe it's right.
Sometimes it's good to go against your gut.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking. I'm feeling like that might be a good example here.
Well, that is correct. University of Phoenix. I didn't even know they were around in
19. I had no idea they were around.
Scott, how did Christian do today?
Good job, Christian. You got 2 out of 3 correct, and that's good enough to be a winner.
Woo!
The most impossible questions we've ever asked any guest.
Yeah, I think those were. Congratulations. You've won absolutely nothing. But Sarah just won a free course on the best online courses and advancement courses. Thank you, Christian, for this kind gift. Sarah is going to love it.
Sarah, we're excited to welcome you into one of our courses.
Awesome. Yeah. Speaking of advancement courses, how about a word from our sponsors, Scott?
Start planning your summer professional development with advancement courses. They offer over 200 online graduate level PD courses in 19 different subject areas for K-12 teachers, just like us, Tim. And because they're online and self-paced, you can take them anywhere, anytime with up to 6 months to complete. The courses are available for graduate credit through CAEP and regionally accredited university partners, or for continuing education units that meet your state requirements.
That's right, Scott. They're a terrific way to get your summer PD done. And the courses really focus on creating practical products you can use in your classroom the very next day. Right now, our listeners can save 20% off each course with the code BROS20, that's BROS and the digits 20. That's just $120 per graduate credit hour or $160 for 50 clock hours. So go to advancementcourses.com/bedley to learn more and use the coupon code BROS20. Get started on your summer PD today.
Yeah, they're not going to regret doing that either, Tim.
Well, thank you so much, Krisha. We know we offer our guests an opportunity to give ways that the audience can connect with them after the show. Obviously, they can find you on Advancement Courses. Do you use Twitter, Facebook, email? Is there some other way that people can perhaps ask you more questions that they might have in the future?
Yes, so we have a Facebook presence. We also do have an Instagram page. My best suggestions, go to our website, and it will give you all the details for how to get in touch with us.
Awesome.
Excellent. Scott, why don't you remind our listeners about one of our other passions besides advancement courses?
Yeah. Hey, Tim.
School Play Day.
Woo! Yeah, Global School Play Day. In 2019, over 500,000 students from 78 nations joined us in this grassroots movement, just started by Tim, you, me, Eric. There's just a small group of us that started this. And so it's really crazy to imagine that a small group of people could make an impact. But really, it's not about that, because it's only spread because of the amazing teachers out there that are on board with how important unstructured play is for their children.
That's right. We struck a nerve. I mean, people started, they knew deep down inside that this generation of kids are not playing. I mean, you can drive around neighborhoods near me, and it used to be that I had to stop all the time because there was a football game going on in the street. And now I go on runs. I never see kids outside. So we want to see kids out there solving their own problems, developing as children should. And so how do we do this? We get the word out through school, dedicating one day of the whole school year to say unstructured play is so important that I'm going to stop doing worksheets for a day.
And I know Oliver, Misty, and Bethany, the other co-founders of Global School Play Day, are so excited for us to reach a million kids in 2020, Tim. That's going to be perfect. There's a lot of zeros in 2020. I think we need a lot of zeros for Global School Play Day. But...
yeah, we'll have to triple the zeros in 2020 to make it six zeros and a million kids, right?
Yeah, that's right.
All right. Well, thank you so much for listening, everyone. If you have a chance, give us a review and some stars, hopefully the most stars you can give us on the podcast station that you listen to this on. And that's how people find out about the show. It's not the number of listens necessarily, but it's the number of reviews. And we'd really appreciate getting the word out so that we can reach even more people with awesome guests like Trisha. I'm going to try it one more time. Lazarevich. So thanks for joining us, Krisha, and we hope to talk to you again soon. Big round here. And thanks for listening, most of all.
Yeah, thanks for listening, Mom and Dad.
Dad.
I think I might change my name to Ron Bedley so I could be one of those Bedley brothers. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Bedley brothers, Bedley, Bedley brothers, bringing education information like no other. Bedley brothers, Bedley, Bedley brothers, bringing